Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to be talking the Kingdom of God. We're going to talk about a number of things. Of course, we always like to try to relate to what's going on in the news, and that's a lot these days with a new president in place for the United States and having effect all around the world. Lots of things going on behind the scenes. Lots of distractions are popping up in the news to keep people preoccupied and busy and divided. A lot of division is going on in the country. Of course, always during election time, there's a lot of division, but this is carrying over beyond the election. People aren't coming together and trying to work together or anything. They're still creating factions. And one of the factions is kind of fascist faction. And the fascist faction is a bit fascist itself. I mean, when we use a word like fascist, we think of, you know, brown shirts or black shirts, as they call them in Italy, and, you know, marching on Rome to consolidate the government. And there were a lot of fascists operating. But what is fascist? You know, it comes from facet, which has to do with this bundle of sticks that are all bound together, and it supposedly makes them stronger because they're all bound together. And then there's this axe blade sticking out of them that's, you know, as a kind of a weapon. And that's what fascist's symbol is. But it's the idea of coming together to create a united front. And of course, fascism back in the day with people like Mussolini was about empire building. Mussolini was going to make Rome great again. And, you know, I pointed out before that a lot of the mannerisms in the speeches of Trump were similar to what you saw Mussolini doing. And you could actually look at his speeches. But, you know, when you saw Mussolini by himself, just wearing his suit and talking in an interview, he was a very mild-mannered person, very quiet person. The problem with, you know, a lot of his ideas were very good. Some of his imperial ideas were very bad. Some of the essential ideas were absolutely devastating. And I'm not trying to draw a parallel between the two, except Saul was a great guy too, but Saul was corrupted because certain things crept in and poisoned his personality, poisoned his mind. Actually, it caused him to become ill. And it all came from the fact that people gave him power. And people gave him power because people didn't want to accept their personal responsibility. So one of the first things I saw on the news this morning when I got up hours ago was Antifa. And when I first saw this word Antifa, I thought, like, what is that? Well, you know, I had to go look it up. Found out it's supposed to stand for anti-fascism. It's supposed to be in opposition to the fascist ideology. It's groups and individuals coming together, like fascists, you know, the bundle of sticks, to make themselves strong. And this anti-fascist movement began, you know, actually way back in Europe around 1920. Eventually spread to a lot of other countries around the world. Historian Norman Davis, he argues in his book about, you know, the war between 1939 and 1945, that I think it was No Simple Victory or something like that. Anyway, his anti-fascist does offer kind of a coherent political ideology that... talking about these different things like fascism and anti-fascism and everything. But he saw the anti-fascist as literally an empty vessel because it had no real solution of its own. It was just anti-fascist. It was against fascism. You know, Davies, he went on and made other assertions about the concept of anti-fascism as a mere political dance, he called it, created by Joseph Stalin to spread Soviet propaganda you know, kind of to justify what they were doing. It kind of gave a false impression to the West that if anything fascists did wrong, anti-fascists must be good. But actually, anti-fascists were not always good. Now, I mean, there were anti-fascists who worked in the underground against the Nazis and all this kind of stuff. Because, again, it doesn't have a particular character to it other than it's against fascism. But even fascism, what is fascism? Fascism is this bundling of individuals and institutions, often using corporations as a part of that bundle, to obtain power and maybe spread an empire. That doesn't seem to be really so much what Trump is trying to do. He wants to make America great again, too, but he's focusing within the borders of America, although he definitely has corporate ties all over the world. And, you know, friends and everything. Not talking about him trying to make himself rich or something by becoming president, which most people who become president, even way back, Nixon, you know, he was very poor, became vice president. He was almost wealthy after that. And shortly after he became president, he was wealthy. So, and the same with Obama. So it isn't their salary they're making money on. So somehow or other, they're making a lot of money when they become president. You really should have a system like the Kingdom of God, and you wouldn't have maybe this problem. But it would still require, because the Kingdom of God is setting people free, it still requires that people take back their responsibility. I saw a post just before we came on. You know, there's a number of widows in our network, but they're just on an email network. They're not necessarily in congregations. And the fact is that unless they're in a congregation, they're not even with us. You have to be congregating to be with us. You have to be connected to a minister who's connected to other ministers, who's connected to other ministers. That's the way it's worked. And this is one of the things that we brought up in the last few shows, how you make that connection, how you connect with each other. Now, I have widows that live around me. We have one that's somebody's been trying to rob recently, you know, through, you know, phone calls and mail and all this kind of stuff, you know, these scam predators. And we have people that are watching out for her and helping her and advising her. And we have, you know, my grandkids are down there piling firewood up. My wife and I were going to go, but I thought it would be another good project for one of our grandkids. So they went down and help stack wood in her house and along her front door so she doesn't have to worry about it. And, you know, there's a number of other widows that we deal with all the time. They're not in our congregation, but they happen to be within our reach, so we just automatically keep an eye on them. We, you know, like I've told before, you know, the people at the store, if the widow doesn't come in for her mail, somebody goes and checks on her. And we just have this kind of unwritten community spirit that makes those things happen. But when you're spread out like we are in this network, you have to pick a minister. When you're making money, you should be putting money in, even no matter if it's just a penny, you should be putting that money in to support other widows so that when you can't make money, there will be other widows or their whatever, their relatives or their friends that say, you know, these people really helped out, and so we'll help them. It's not about amount. It's about, you know, circulation. If you cut off all circulation to a part of your body, you know, if it's your finger or whatever, it dies. That's it. And so you have to keep the flow in circulation. And that was one of the things the thing that I just posted last night was this Stephen Americo page. We actually made an actual page just dedicated to him because he put all this work into a document that he thought was an alternative church structure document or something. And we've spent, you know, probably today a dozen hours already explaining how he's missing it. That's not it. What he's describing is not it. Now, we've already spent, you know, probably, I don't know how much, I mean, all the hours of people who've put in to make videos, write books, read books, proofread books, articles, publish them. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars in time and energy and actually money going out. You know, I've flown to Washington, D.C. several times. I've presented our books to top attorneys to look at to see if what we're doing is legal. I've gone and met with Bible scholars and pastors all over the country presenting what we have found. And I can't find anybody who has an argument against it, except they don't like it, or they are afraid to go that way. They don't have, you know, I mean, I found a lot of people who are very receptive and thought it was fascinating and agreed with it. But again, that's not enough to be against it or be for it, but not do anything, not, you know, join an assembly. See, you don't become a member of a congregation. We don't like that word member because you're not, it's not an unincorporated association. This is a discussion I had with attorneys many times because they kept trying to flip into the unincorporated association. They couldn't quite get their mind around. The church is a corporation of Christ. It's the body, the corpus of Christ. It belongs to Christ. The congregant doesn't necessarily belong to Christ. He's seeking the kingdom of God in his righteousness, and he's saved by grace. But the ministers, the ordained ministers, have to actually belong to Christ. They can fake that. They can say they belong to Christ. And Jesus tells us that many will say they are the church, but he's going to say to them, many are going to say that. You know, get ye from me, I know you not. Why? Because they're not really doing what he says. So we emphasize what he said all the time and try to get people to do that, to do what he said. And we're told in the Bible, you know, not forsaking to assemble ourselves together. If you don't forget others, we won't forget you. But people are constantly, you know, they're off in their little religious idea. They make their little friends around them, their little congregation around them, their little home church, and they meet with them, and they find that that's not adequate as they get older. that there isn't the real bond. You have to be casting your bread upon the waters. You have to be coming together in a network, not a bundle of sticks tied together with corporate agreements and contracts and all the stuff, the fascist sticks. Remember those? You know, you got like 50 sticks all tied together with these leather straps in the fascist symbol. We don't have those leather straps. We have faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. And so in order for you to be remembered in the minds and hearts of those seeking the kingdom, you have to remember them when you're young and you're working and you're making a living. You have to remember them. We don't care about amounts, but we care about circulation. You know, I know some people whose natural heartbeat is around 70 beats per minute, naturally. You know, that's just their heart. They just have high heart rate beat. I know other people have a heart rate beat that barely makes it to 60, and that's natural for them. That's just the way they are. That's the way they're built. But there's still a soul in that body. But if that heart stops beating and the circulation stops flowing, they're all dead. They just die. The seat of the soul is the blood, Moses says, and the blood must flow. So if you want to be a part of the body, you have to flow in that body, with that body, be a part of that body. Being on an email group, that don't cut it. That just don't cut it. You have to be a part of that. You have to bind yourself together, not with contracts, not by forcing people, but with love for one another. And you don't see that love, the bonds of love. You don't see them. They're not like leather straps. They're not like contracts we can hold up. So what we hold up is you fill out a sacred purpose trust, a declaration of sacred purpose. You give something into a congregation, and you're a part of that congregation. And you give regularly, just like your blood, your heartbeat flows regularly. And it's up to you. Nobody's going to make you do it. No Levites were forcing the tithings of the people, the free will offerings of the people. That's why they call them free will offerings, because they were your choice. But if you don't make that choice, don't make no complaints, because you haven't got a leg to stand on. But anyway, let's look back at these fascist things that are going on. Fascist state, you know, I'll read you something that Benito said. Fascist state is a will to power and empire. It's a will to power and empire. It's a will to exercise authority one over the other, whether it's a group of states or one state. I mean, it's kind of like federalism. Federalism was, you know, the states, even after the acceptance of the Constitution of the United States and the implementation of that Constitution of the United States, you know, with there was only 13 states back then, the states were as foreign to each other as Mexico is to Canada. They were separate countries. People don't realize that. That's Clark's Summary of U.S. American Law. That's one of the most foundational, fundamental books in the study of American law, including constitutional law. They have a whole chapter on constitutional law. That the states were foreign countries. They were bound together with just certain powers that they granted, the states granted, not the people, never put to a vote of the people. It was unpopular amongst the people. Had the Constitution been put to a vote of the people, it would have been voted down. Most people don't know that. They don't know a lot of things about history because they went to public school, because they didn't take the responsibility of educating themselves or their children. They went to somebody else and wanted to force their neighbor to pay for their education. They got an education, learned how to read and write, maybe. They learned how to add a column of numbers. Maybe they went on to become nuclear scientists, but they don't know history. They don't know how they got to where they are today. Because they don't know history, they're doomed to repeating the same mistakes. And those mistakes are going to come out of your hearts because of the flow of your hearts. Your heart is not flowing for the love of others, to forgive others. Your heart is flowing to get your stuff, to be comfortable, to feel righteous. And so, I mean, that's why people go to church. They want to feel righteous. They want to feel saved. It's all about them. They're not coming in the spirit of Christ. Christ didn't come to be saved, but to save others. He didn't come to be served. He came to serve others. That's a certain kind of person. And that's a rare kind of person. The rare kind of person comes to sacrifice their life. And God has created a whole system called the family and society, where you get the chance to try to do that. I mean, a woman has a baby. She's sacrificing herself to raise that child. A husband is a husband of a family. He goes out and works to support that family. That's why ministers should come from men who produce families. Husbands of one wife. You know, who have raised their children. You couldn't even become what they call the Levite. You might be of that tribe, but you wouldn't even be expected to do anything until you were 25 years old. Well, you probably already had 3-4 kids by then. In those days, the people got married at 16, 15. Young men were out working, making a living at 15. So, but you couldn't start participating in the duties of a Levite until you were 25, but you could retire at 50. So from manual labor, because then you had raised a family, you had learned the ropes, and now you knew what it was to be a Levite, which was the priesthood of the nation. They were facilitating a network that took care of the widows and orphans, education, etc. We're going to talk about that education thing and how that should have been done if you were real Christians. But anyway, let's keep looking. I said I was going to read something that old Benito Mussolini said. And he said, the fascist state is a will to power and empire. The Roman tradition is here a powerful force. According to the doctrine of fascism, empire is not only territorial or military or mercantile concept, but a spiritual and moral one. This is Benito Mussolini. One can think of an empire that is a nation which directly and indirectly guides other nations without the need to conquer a single square kilometer of territory. Now, it'd be interesting to know when he actually said that, because he definitely went out and was just trying to conquer things in Ethiopia. So and a lot of other places besides. But and certainly Hitler was too, and he was, you know, clearly aligned with Hitler. But what was, it doesn't start out that way. It starts out as, you know, the National Fascist Party, which, you know, we say fascist and right away we think something bad, you know, police state, all this kind of stuff. But they just saw the fascists as people coming together, you know, to do something. But if you don't define what you're really doing and the principles by which you're doing it, it can become something else. And we see hedging in this idea of the doctrine of fascism, something else. You know, the idea of spiritual and moral coming together, great. But what were the other things that slipped in there that were not great? Now, of course, you know, they had a constitution and everything, and their constitution was totally, totally unbiblical in Italy. And of course, all of you have read it, studying history, right? You didn't read the National Fascist Party's constitution? Oh, you didn't read that? Nobody ever taught you anything about that? So you don't even know what a fascist is. You don't even know what they were thinking. You wouldn't even know if you were supporting a fascist government or not. And yet we have guys running around being Antifa, which of course, you know, I just pointed out that, you know, Stalin was, you know, anti-fascist. But it was a mere political dance, an empty vessel, etc. It didn't know what it was doing. It was actually composed of thin-minded people who don't really have the big picture. So anyway, you know, Mussolini had this political expression of fascism, and it evolved during the time between 1922 and 1943 when they were in power. I wanted to, you know, I'm really going to be talking about charity, but you have to kind of talk about it in the context of reality and history. And so most of you have no idea about your past history. So I have to bring that up and kind of show you where those holes are in your thinking. And then we're going to take you to the solution. But we'll do that when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom. Okay, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom, and we're looking at the rise of Benito Mussolini in order to get a picture of what's actually going on today, and we're going to go into some of the things that we see going on today, but then we're going to get into what the actual solution is, which is seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness, which most people have no clue of what that means to do. That was a direct command of Jesus Christ. And he said, if you did that, everything else would be resolved. You know, all the problems of widows and orphans, the problems of totalitarian dictatorships. I mean, you have no idea how completely thoroughly those things would be resolved if you were actually seeking that. You know, that's what I always hear from, you know, the communists of today, which a lot of your Antifa people are communists. Some of them think they're socialists, but some of them actually want communism, but they don't even have a clue what they're talking about. They often say, we try to point out the failures of communism, and they say, well, they weren't trying real communism. But these guys, they actually have an inability to put ideas together and, you know, connect them. They're slogan people. They have lots of slogans. I mean, there were lots of slogans in the days of the rise of Mussolini. Viva il Duce. Long live the leader. El Duce, you know, but actually it's long live the ruler. They're looking for men who exercise authority, who can rule over us, and they want to put them into power. And Jesus said we were not to be that way. This is in Italy, one of the most Catholic nations, supposedly Christian nations, you know, are in Europe. And they are looking for a leader to exercise authority one over the other to take care of them. Yet Jesus said it was not to be that way with you if you're going to be a follower of Christ. They don't even see the connection because their ministers hadn't been teaching them that. I mean, they certainly don't teach that in the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church has been crowning leaders over other people, rulers over other people, for almost 1,000 years now. You know, they've been putting the crowns on the head of men to rule over other men. Yet Jesus said it was not to be that way with us. And of course, it isn't that way with the Catholic Church. They just crown other men. They are empire builders. But now, I don't want to pick on the poor Pope. You know, he's hiding behind his wall there in the Vatican, telling other people they shouldn't build walls. And every time I hear that, I always think of the people during the Peloponnesian Wars when the Athenians went up and tried to talk them into building a wall around their city to protect them. And, of course, borrow money from the Athenians to do so. You got to borrow money because walls cost money. They said, we are our walls. You know, that's in the news. We'll talk about it. We want to build a wall between us and Mexico. Mexico has walls and borders and rules. If we had put the rules that Mexico has for illegal immigrants into play, I mean, if you're caught as an illegal immigrant, it's 2 years to 10 years in jail in Mexico. And their jails aren't as nice. They don't get TV in their jails. You could be brutally beat on the street and deported rapidly if you even survive deportation. They are ruthless with illegal immigrants. I mean, they got an American who just got lost driving around out in the desert, and he crossed over the border somewhere, and they put him in jail. He wasn't even trying to be an illegal immigrant. He just got lost, and he was out four-wheeling, and they caught him on their side. I mean, they are ruthless. So you see these guys talking, you know, the president of Mexico. What a bunch of hypocrisy. But anyway, not that there isn't hypocrisy on both sides of the border. But the reality is that, you know, they said we should be building bridges, not walls. Well, the fact is the United States built the bridges. They just want the people to use the bridges. So they're building a wall to make them go through the bridge. In other words, enter the country legally. Of course, I'm really against all that. I don't think any of that is the solution. Bridges, walls, or anything. What we should do and must do in order to succeed, which we probably don't have the will in America to do, is to do away with welfare. Absolutely across the board, no state welfare in any form whatsoever, including, which would extend eventually to public schools, because public school is welfare. It would eventually extend even to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all those things. It would extend to those things because all those things are bankrupt, they're failed, unrighteous mammon, and they're not going to work. But I don't want to do away with those things. I want to do away with the need for those things. If you just did away with those, it would be terrible. People would be starving and dying and, you know, left and right all over the country. They would not be able to even make it. And because there is very little righteousness left in America. Because nobody's been seeking the kingdom. Certainly the churches out there, the preachers out there, they're not seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. They're not seeking, almost none of them have a daily ministration. Oh, they'll have some food kitchen somewhere that feeds people who are totally irresponsible. It might feed some people that need help, but they're weakening people. They're feeding the bears, so to speak. And they're weakening them. They're not strengthening them. I mean, we used to have charity in this country that did that, but that we haven't had that to any great extent for almost 100 years now, certainly 50 years. And we're seeing that we're paying that price. But anyway, if he did away with that, illegal immigration would not be a problem anymore. If you were seeking the kingdom of God and you were creating the network required, people were joining assemblies, you know, joining with assemblies and taking care of the widows and orphans and needy of their society through faith, hope, and charity, and get rid of all this ridiculous religious rhetoric that doesn't have anything to do with pure religion. What pure religion is about: compassion and caring about one another, about strengthening the poor, about setting the table of the Lord, and being there for the true widow and orphan who needs help, and whoever is needy in society who needs help. I mean, basically, why they say widows and orphans all the time is because families should be taking care of families. But occasionally families need help because, you know, part of their family is broken down or there's a difficulty. You know, somebody's sick, somebody's ill, somebody's injured, and they need help. If we were focusing on that and helping those who want to help themselves and work themselves and generate an income that takes care of their family, you know, an income from the earth, and take care of their family and the families next to them and the families in a network of love, America would not have any of the problems that it has today. You would have a dome of protection over the entire nation. That's gone. That is gone. We are not protected by that anymore. It's getting worse and worse and worse. And you're not doing anything about it because you're not really gathering together in the character of Christ, in the name of Christ, in the way of Christ. You got your head full of loony religious ideas that don't do anything that the first century church was doing. So anyway, the fascists had all kinds of other things. You know, long live death. That was another one of their great mottos. Viva la muerte. What actually was really, they didn't want you all to die. You were supposed to be willing to even sacrifice yourself unto death. And of course, you know, he who lays down his life for his fellow man, no greater love has that man shown. So that's tied with the same principles of Christ. It just depends on how you accept it. You know, I mean, these are slogans that you used to hear from Mussolini and fascists. You know, another one: believe, obey, and fight. You know, that's a little less Christ-like, but believe is in there. Credere, you know, they want you to believe. Believe in what? Remember, it's a spiritual and moral movement. Trying to move you back. There was a lot of corruption going on in society, both in Germany. I mean, the, you know, cabaret, the promiscuity, the immorality. And of course, that's one of the reasons that the Nazis rose to power, is they said they were going to do something about that. But unfortunately, what they were going to do about that was not what Christ said, but it was this looking to men who exercise authority. And lo and behold, the men who exercised authority became immoral. I mean, what happened to David? David, great guy, great moralist, great defender of righteousness and the weightier matters, but you gave him power and he's sleeping with Bathsheba. You know, he tried to do right eventually by that and everything, but he was plotting the death of Bathsheba's husband, everything, because power corrupts. Nothing can come out of getting an El Duce, a leader who's going to make you great again. Leaders do not make you great again. They allow you to remain ungreat. So anyway, one of the things that we see that is part of the morality of fascism is in one of their other slogans, which is everything in the state, nothing outside the state, nothing against the state. Now you have to remember that word state that we see, the Stato in Italian, it didn't necessarily mean exactly what you think it means today, but it's close enough. And this is why Mussolini said, you know, fascism is the only liberty which can be a serious thing, the liberty of the state and of the individual in the state. Therefore, the fascist, everything is in the state, and no human or spiritual thing exists or has any sort of value outside of the state. This is Mussolini. In this sense, fascism is totalitarian, and the fascist state, which is the synthesis and unity of every value, interprets, develops, and strengthens the entire life of the people. Now there's fascism. But again, fascism is that bundle of sticks bound together by leather thongs that are strapped around, you know, thick leather thongs, binding them together. That's contracts, covenants, and constitutions binding you together. kingdom of heaven is bound together by love. It has a form. And we see that form in the early church. We see it in early Israel. We see it in many of the free nations throughout Europe, way back in ancient history. Well, I say we see it. We who have actually studied history see it. You people who went to public school, you probably don't see it. But you see certain ideas popping up in this fascist state of Mussolini as it was rising to power. You know, another slogan, if I advance, follow me. If I retreat, kill me. If I die, avenge me. So, you know, these are, you know, and they had another one, mine frego. I don't give a damn. That's the way that translates. So I'm just translating the Italian for you. But anyway, you know, and they say things like liberty is not a right, it's a duty. So they have the idea of responsibility, but they poison it with the idea of ruling over one another. You know, and I've got articles that show that Jesus Christ was an anarchist. I mean, you can see it right there in his command to us. We are not to be like the governments of the Gentiles whose rulers, princes, exercise authority one over the other. That means no ruler. Peter wasn't a ruler over the people. That makes him an anarchist, because that's what anarchism actually means, is no ruler. It doesn't mean chaos. It doesn't mean running through the streets and breaking ATMs and windows at coffee shops and all these kinds of things. Anarchist means he doesn't want to have somebody ruling over him, but he doesn't want people ruling. He doesn't want to rule over other people. And most of what you see calling itself anarchists today, they want to rule over everybody. But they're those empty Antifa vessels that really don't have a plan. they're just mad, and they're hitting people with sticks and spraying people and picking on girls. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They're just obscene. But that's what you're going to get. That brutality, you see that rising up. And historians saw it coming to Rome 200 years before the first emperor. Or at least 150 years before the first emperor. And they wrote about it. And we quote them. You go read Polybius on our website. What did Polybius say? Because that's what you're seeing. This is the product of socialism. America is not a capitalist nation anymore. It hasn't been capitalist for almost 100 years now. It's been growing more and more socialist all the time. And that's where all your problems are coming from. Well, actually, that's the instrument of your problems. The problem is you're not really seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. You're not seeking the perfect law of liberty, so therefore you will not be free. You're slothful in the ways of God, but you don't even know what they are because your preachers are out there tickling your ears. And so anyway, we end up with this, what's happening now is a divide and conquer mentality. You know, this whole idea of a dialectic needs two sides. You need a fascist side and you need an anti-fascist side. You need, you need these opposing forces. And this is what we're seeing taking place. But how do you step out of that so you're not a part of any one of those two forces? That you become immune to the conflict that they are creating. You know, I knew a minister, and I hope he comes back as a minister of the church eventually. He's kind of off there seeking his own thing right now, and he has to work these things out. But he once was in the middle of a crowd of two people. I think it was pro-life and pro-choice people. I'm not sure. I can't remember. That was irrelevant. It was two opposing dialectic forces, and they were yelling at each other and everything. It may have been something a little bit more violent, but he actually was standing in between the two, and he said he could feel the energy flowing from these two groups. And of course, he was in the midst of this dialectic. Well, this storm of conflict, which is what we see rising and filtering around, and people get real cocky because these Antifa people are so pathetic. But the reality is behind the scenes, all over America, on Facebook, on Twitter, in the news media, people are being polarized in creating these two factions. And emotionalized in this, and they're in their houses and in their living rooms and in their cars, They're extending energy outside of themselves in this conflict. They get angry. They throw fits. They throw temper tantrums. And right now, you know, all the ones who are on the other side get to gloat and say, well, I told you so, and you lost the election and all this kind of stuff. But really, what you see is a polarization taking place in society. And it's energizing something that's more malevolent than you can imagine. And it's coming to America. It's coming to the whole world. You're not ready for it because you haven't been seeking the kingdom of God in his righteousness. You haven't been loving one another. You haven't been organizing, coming together in a facet bound by love. You haven't been doing that. If you have been sitting on our email networks for years now and you have not actually signed up, when I say signed up, I mean given, born witness, become a part of the warp and weft of the covering of the church by actually sitting down with other people and caring about one another. And I'm not talking about sitting in the same room where you can all kind of scratch each other back and feel good and have, frappes together and all this kind of stuff. I'm talking about actually on your own as an individual, stick in the facet, care about others. Because that's what you're bound together with is care and love and charity. And hope that it will be there for you. And you cast your bread upon the waters. It doesn't have to be a lot, a penny, a dime, a nickel, or whatever. But you have to, as you give, so shall you be given to. As you forgive, so shall you be forgiven. So, if you can give more and you don't, well, expect the same back. Don't complain if people don't give back to you. You weren't giving when you had. You need to be fruitful. Plant yourself. Don't be lazy. Don't sit around and do nothing. Don't say, I'm weak. If you care, that's enough. You need to care in a way. Care about yourself. Care about your own health. Are you eating right? Are you exercising right? Are you working? Are you producing? Or are you not? You know, I saw this last week several stories. There was a guy who he weighed like 400 pounds and he was a trucker and he lost that weight. Almost had his name there for a second. He did it with a certain diet. Well, most people don't know that he went back and gained all that weight back again. And why he did that, we'll talk about that in the next show. He's now again lost it again. So, but there's an error in his approach. I mean, his diet was a good idea and everything, but there's something missing in his approach. And we're going to talk about this because you lose your individuality if you depend upon the other sticks to give you strength. You have to be strong on your own. You know what? The reason I tell people that we come together to learn to stand alone. And in order to do that, you have to come together in a certain way. And that way happens to be the way of Christ. Individually, you have to take on all your personal responsibilities of taking care of yourself and take care of others. This is why the ministry usually came from family men, is because they learned that sacrifice required in taking care of their own children, their wife, the forgiveness required to maintain a marriage and to stick it out, the humility that's required to do what you need to do to make a family work. And it doesn't mean you'll do it perfectly, but there are lessons to be learned in that. What has America forgot that has led it to this precipice is they forgot how to live by faith, hope, and charity. Charity, word charity there is also translated love. They forgot to live how to live by love. They like to think they love, but they don't really love as much. And they need to love in a uniform way, according to the character of Christ. And this is what the early church was learning. This is what the early church was doing. And many of the people in America, this is what made America great. It was not the presidents. It was not the Constitution. Constitution, I mentioned the Constitution of Italy, which you haven't read, but the Constitution of the United States. Did you know that there are five basic principles we are told to write down in a constitution if we elect a leader who can exercise authority? The Bible tells us to put these five things in writing and read them to your leader every day. Only one of them is in the Constitution, and we don't even pay attention to that one. But anyway, another little point here we'll get in this side of the show is somebody was saying that the President Trump was, he's running the United States as if he's a CEO. You know, what does CEO stand for? Chief Executive Officer. What is the president? The Chief Executive Officer of the United States. He's the executive branch, right? He's the chief of the executive branch of the United States. He's supposed to be the CEO. What the heck? I don't get it. I don't think there's salvation in what the United States is doing. I don't think the United States is seeking the United States for a solution, is seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. But it's out there. It's the reality. You're under that king, that ruler, that chief executive officer, that CEO. And you're under the gods of that corporation, which is the Supreme Court. They're going to decide what is good and evil for you. And you're under the lawmakers, which is your Congress and your Senate. That's what you've created. Now, if you want relief, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And that's what we're going to tell you when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.